here this afternoon. Nice to see everybody on a beautiful, beautiful spring day. Our first bill that we're going to hear a public hearing on is Senate Bill 70. And I'll invite Robin Freeman with the Department of Motor Vehicles to come up, and I'll ask Judith to tell us a little bit about that bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair members. Senate Bill 70 makes a person ineligible for driving privileges if the person is affected by a mental or physical condition or impairment that affects the person's ability to safely operate motor vehicles. It standardizes medical language relating to those driving privileges. We have received a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact on the measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Robin?
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The Department of Transportation requested this bill to address inconsistencies in the statutes directing Oregon's driver medical program. Senate Bill 70 standardizes the medical language related to driving privileges to ensure consistency with the mandatory medical reporting statute. This bill will make medical-related license eligibility standards consistent with the requirements of the mandatory medical reporting statute, which states that determinations about a person's ability to safely operate a motor vehicle cannot be based solely on the diagnosis of a medical condition, cognitive or functional impairment, but must be based on the actual effect of that condition or impairment on the person's ability to safely operate a motor vehicle. DMV recognizes that some individuals have or may develop medical conditions or impairments that impact their ability to safely operate a motor vehicle. DMV's medical program identifies these individuals through mandatory reporting of severe and uncontrollable impairments by medical providers, voluntary reporting of physical or mental conditions by law enforcement, family courts, medical providers, and others, self-reporting of medical issues on DMV license application forms, and DMV vision screening. Requirements for medical eligibility for driving privileges and mandatory reporting by medical providers are addressed in statute. For many years, Oregon law required mandatory reporting by physicians of individuals with medical conditions which bring about momentary or prolonged lapses of consciousness or control. These individuals were ineligible for driving privileges under Oregon law. House Bill 3071, passed by the Oregon Legislature in 2001, redefined medical issues that must be reported. The law mandates that medical providers report individuals with functional and or cognitive impairments that are severe and uncontrollable, and as such are likely to render individuals unsafe to operate motor vehicles. This law, effective statewide on June 1, 2004, replaced the previous law requiring the reporting of conditions which bring about momentary or prolonged lapses of consciousness or control. While medical providers are now required to report severe and uncontrollable impairments, the statutes granting driving privileges were not revised to reflect this change. The medical language related to driver license eligibility in these statutes still refer to conditions which bring about lapses of consciousness or control and inconsistently uses terminology such as disability and disease. And attached to my testimony today, I have the actual driver's license application form. And the easiest way to talk about this bill and the impacts is to look at this form, and I've marked a section of the application which talks about, it asks a question to people coming in to apply for a driver's license or to renew a driver's license. And currently what you're asked today is, have you had a loss of consciousness or physical control, or has your ability to drive been impaired within the last 2 years? And if you answer yes to this question, then you need to explain, and below that are listed a selection of basically diseases that you may have, or you have to explain why you've had this occur. So today we're linking eligibility to a disease and not the actual impacts of a condition, and that's what we're trying to change. So that kind of simplifies what we're trying to do by attaching this.
All right.
Senate Bill 70 will resolve this inconsistency in medical language between the mandatory reporting and driving privileges statute. References to conditions which bring about lapses of consciousness or control and disability and disease will be removed. This language will be replaced with terminology, mental or physical condition or impairment that affects the person's ability to safely operate a motor vehicle. This change in language will standardize terminology and aid the department's creation of a seamless medical program for determining a driver's eligibility based on the same criterion of impairments as those used in the mandatory medical reporting statutes. So eligibility, the eligibility statute will be tied, it currently is tied to a diagnosis. The medical reporting statutes are based on actual effect of condition or impairments, that condition or impairment has on one's ability to drive today. And so that's what we're trying to create here, something that's actually based on what's happening today and not just a diagnosis. Thank you, and I ask the committee to support this bill.
Thank you, Robin. Can you give me an example of some condition that I might have that I could have experienced an inability to drive, physical inability to drive, and how I need then to not know that's going to happen to me next week?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
If I've had a seizure, and then I go, and I've not had another seizure. I had a seizure 2 months ago. And then I go to get a driver's license, and it says here my ability was impaired, and I mark yes. What then do I do? Do I have a physician give me something in writing that says I'm now on medication?
Madam Chair, what would happen today if you went in and marked this yes is that we would, if you were coming in for an original, your first time driver's license, we would not issue that driver's license. If you were coming in to get your renewal, we would issue the driver's license, but then we would send you a follow-up notice that you needed to answer more questions. And perhaps if it was something severe such as epilepsy or diabetes and you had a loss of consciousness, you would then be required to get a certification completed by your physician or a physician stating that you had the ability to drive. We could also require vision testing if it was a vision problem. We would collect those reports at DMV. We would review the reports, and if it was something that we didn't feel comfortable making a determination about, for instance, if you had a sinus infection at some point and you answered yes and at some point you'd lost consciousness because of a sinus infection, DMV would probably look at your doctor's report and not send it on to the state health department. But if you had a seizure disorder or something more serious and we didn't feel like we should make a determination, we would send that on to the state health examiner. They would review the report and they would make a finding and a determination about whether or not they felt you were competent to drive.
Okay, it's 2006 and Senate Bill 70 has passed and I go in and it's a renewal. What's going to happen?
The question will be different, and I can't tell you what the question will be, but it'll be based on driving and the impact of a condition that you have today that is impacting your driving ability. So you're currently having some issues that are not under control. And then you will go through a similar procedure to determine if this can be brought under control or it cannot be brought under control.
Senator Whitford, you have any questions?
Just a comment.
Any questions?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. Robin, I guess I think you and I talked about this early on in the session. One of the concerns I have from my police officers is how long it takes DMV to actually do the evaluation and bring someone in for testing. And I've actually was requested to submit legislation that would give them the ability to basically pull the license immediately and then setting up basically an appeal process in a very short time frame, like a stalking order, requiring so many, within so many hours that they would be able to go in front of the team to determine whether or not they should be limited or prohibited from driving because of the medical condition. Can you give us some information as to what the time frame is currently and under the process where an officer may submit the paperwork to have someone retested to make certain that they're in the best physical condition, mental faculties, etc., to operate a motor vehicle.
Madam Chair, Senator Prasansky, I think what you're talking about is our medical at-risk program, and that's a licensed driver that a law enforcement officer comes in contact with. And I would have to get, we have different amounts of time depending on what the condition is and how it's reported that we would pull. I can't answer that today. This bill deals with eligibility. This is a person at the counter filling out an application for a first-time driver's license, or they're renewing. So a law enforcement officer isn't involved at this stage. The person is in front of DMB, again, trying to obtain an original driver's license or a renewal. And they're attesting to the fact that either they're fit or they're answering the question that's attached to the that's on the driver application saying, no, I'm not fit. And I believe we do a follow-up letter within a very short time frame, but I don't know exactly. I can get that information. And I can follow up on the driver medical at-risk program also.
Madam Chair, if I
could. Sure. Follow up.
It's really more for the committee. I mean, I'm looking at the relating clause on this, relating to driving privileges. And I guess I'd like to know what the answers are to these questions, because if we don't have some kind of continuity of making certain that someone can be retested on a very short period of time, I think that's something that we may want to see if we can accommodate this cycle, just for the simple fact that you know, there are a number of communities that are seen where some individuals may just not have the mental faculty because of the onset of amnesia, Parkinson's, or something that might cause them not to be able to operate. And I want to make certain that there's a balance in the system, that if they're going to be reported, that they're going to be tested quicker than later, and so we can make certain that they're safe as well as everyone might be impacted by them being on the road.
Okay. Senator Whitfield, do you have a comment for me? Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other comments or discussion? Senator Prasansky has brought up some things that he would like to pursue before he's satisfied with the bill. So I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 70, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 153.
Thank you, Madam Chair members. Senate Bill 153 requires each city operating photo radar light camera or photo radar system to present a biennial report to the Legislative Assembly, and it terminates photo red light camera and photo radar systems as of January 2nd, 2008. You have at your seat at the dais the -6 amendments. Those remove the termination date. They require signs indicating the cameras in operation to be placed before the device. It allows a registered owner to respond with a certificate of innocence by mail for either a red light or a mobile unit citation. It requires jurisdictions to dismiss the citation without requiring a court appearance from the registered owner when a certificate of innocence is submitted. It allows jurisdiction to reissue the citation only once if the register owner appears to, in fact, be the driver that's subject to the citation. It prohibits a registered owner from submitting a certificate of innocence if responding to that reissued citation. And finally, allows the citation to be prepared on a digital medium and the signature to be electronic.
All right. Thank you, Judith. Senator Metzger?
Thank you, Madam
Chair. Tell us a little bit about why we have all these.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, as you know, when we had our public hearing a month and a half or so ago on Senate Bill 153, and our testimony primarily dealt with trying to find consistency with how different jurisdictions were operating photo red light and photo radar to see that is, in fact, consistent throughout those jurisdictions. And as a result of working with different parties on this, came up with a way in which to essentially see that this, that the law that most of the folks who testified previously on this bill actually are already doing, to see that it was clarified so that all jurisdictions and any jurisdictions that might subsequently be added to have this authority would be operating the same way. I want to point out just a couple of things on the amendment. And I say, Madam Chair, we're going to actually have to have another little amendment, and it's being processed, and we should have it done in about 15 minutes that Senator Starr caught. So we might, we can go ahead and take the testimony, and we should have the amendment. But I'll explain what that is. On page 1 of the Dash 6 amendments, if you look at lines 17 through 19, it talks about how the signs indicating the camera may be in operation are posted before the device at a location near the device. In the previous testimony, we heard that some cases, some of these notifications were actually after the device. And we don't, and Senator Starr pointed out and caught the fact that we applied that standard only to the photo red light, and the real issue on that particular issue was the photo radar. And so Legislative Council is adding that that language that clearly indicates this is to be prior to the where the unit is in use. That'll be the only change, and that's being worked on now. The, as Judith pointed out, it clarifies the certificate of innocence and that these can be done by mail. On the other hand, as Judith pointed out, made it very clear in the law that a jurisdiction can, if once receiving the certificate of innocence, and it's, it has been evaluated by the officials, and they do believe that it is, in fact, that person, that they can reissue it, which is current law, but we added a stronger tool for the jurisdictions so they don't have a revolving account with certificates of innocence, that if it does appear to be that person, they can reissue that citation and then actually bring them into court and then decide that on the facts. And then also the electronic preparation was one that was asked to have as to facilitate the process. And what I think these amendments do, Madam Chair, is, again, the point is we discussed in our original hearing was not necessarily to be punitive to these jurisdictions, but just to make sure that everyone does conform to the law and that it is consistent. Certainly had no intention to be punitive on that, but we want to make sure that people do operate within the law and that we're not requiring citizens to do things that the law does not allow them to do. I think this gets to that, and I think you'll hear from the testimony that people are prepared to move forward with this clarification of the certificate of innocence.
Senator Metzger, just to make it very, very clear, if I send in a certificate of innocence and when they look at the picture, it is indeed me, I can't have another certificate of innocence.
Right. They would reissue a citation, and then at that point they could bring you into the court to decide the facts on the merits as the judge would therefore determine. But they can't require you to name another driver as a requirement to quote, let you off the hook if in fact you're not the driver. That goes beyond, I think we talked about some constitutional issues there, and the real question is the person who was driving the vehicle, if that does appear to be you, that they can reissue that. But in the past we heard the stories at least one jurisdiction was requiring you to name the other person if it wasn't you and was preparing to prosecute you even if they knew you were innocent. And we, I think the general thing was that that's not proper.
Okay. All right. Do I need a list? No list? No list? All right. Well, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to invite those that would like to come up and have something to say about this bill. Please come forward. This is the chief of police / mayor of Beaverton this week. This week.
Pretty heavy.
That's right.
And I have my city attorney with me. That even makes it worse. Madam Chair, member of the committee, first of all, I appreciate the opportunity to testify for you today. My name is David G. Bishop, and I'm the chief of police for the city of Beaverton. And I've had, I think, the opportunity to meet with most of you pertain to this issue. And I think that what we accomplished from that was very positive and very beneficial for us as far as our jurisdiction. I'm here to testify today that we totally support this amendment 100%. The senator and myself talked about a lot of issues pertaining to fairness, consistency, and I think that's really the key to why I'm here today, because it is fairness and it is consistency. And reading this amendment, I think it accomplishes what we would like to see, being consistent throughout the different jurisdictions that have either photo radar and or photo signal. And so I'm happy today to support this amendment in totality.
Thank you, Chief. Any questions for the chief?
No, can I make a comment, though? I really do appreciate the work of the city of Beaverton, and particularly leadership of Chief Bishop on this issue and addressing the issues, and I appreciate that very much.
Thank you.
Every once in a while, I said a little earlier to someone that this process works, and it's just a wonderful day when it does.
Well, and this is a perfect example of that.
All right.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Ron Norris. I'm the retired deputy chief from the Medford Police Department, and I started the program down there in Medford and was responsible for it up until my retirement. I support it now as a private citizen, and it works. It really works. It's cost-effective. We have increasing demands for service, we have declining revenue, and we have to look at ways to address these traffic issues, and photo enforcement is one of the ways. We do support the way the amendment is written as it is now. We have had problems in the past of going into a citation loop where we issue a citation, we look at the driver's license, it's obviously the driver of the vehicle, we reissue, and then in comes another certificate of innocence, and this will eliminate the loop that we're going into now. We really appreciate the committee's work on photo enforcement and the support for photo enforcement, and the citizens of Medford are very supportive down there, and it has drastically decreased our speeding vehicles and red light violations, and we want to thank you for that, and we do support this legislation.
Thank you very much. All right. Others in the audience?
Good afternoon. Mark Landauer with the Office of Government Relations for the City of Portland. I've asked members of the Portland Traffic Bureau to come down and testify before you this afternoon. I want to thank particularly Senator Metzger for all his assistance. We've had a couple of issues that we needed clarified, and he was very gracious in accommodating us, and we thank him for that. But for the city certainly supports the Dash 6 amendments. We're very comfortable with it, and frankly, it meets our understanding of what the law had been from the beginning. Thank you.
I'm Bill Sennett. I'm the commander of the Portland Police Traffic Division, and we've reviewed the bill and the amendments. We support it completely. I want to thank you for all the work that you've done on it. This makes it better for us. It'll make it better for our program. We look to expand our photo radar as we're able to. We're especially looking at deploying it in school zones here in the near future. And I just want to thank you for your work.
Thank you very much. Now, you've heard the explanation of the Dash 7 amendment. I want to be sure that everybody that's saying that they agree with the Dash 6s are okay with the Dash 7. Legal counsel will be bringing it down momentarily, so I want to be sure about that. All right. Thank you so much for making an effort to be here this afternoon. Are there any others that would like to come forward?
I'm sure if we could recess for 15 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's...
So your people don't have to sit here, but kind of said she should have them then.
All right.
Now, apparently that's been pulled from the calendar, she said. So. Say at 4 o'clock. Let's see if it's 22.
No. We're going to be at ease for about, take a break for about 15 minutes, so.
Thanks for catching that.
Okay. We were in the process of amendments to Senate Bill 153. We now have the dash 9 amendments. And
Madam Chair?
Senate, yes.
Can I move the dash 9 amendments to Senate Bill 153? The dash 9 amendments?
The dash 9? Yeah, okay. Now, don't throw me off here. All right. Senator Starr has moved the dash 9 amendments to follow through that. Any discussion? Seeing none, Senator Starr?
So order the amendment adopted.
I didn't watch
the without objection.
Well, the motion, the amendments have been adopted without objection.
Very good. Okay, and then I would move Senate Bill 153 as amendment to the Senate Floor Review Council recommendation.
All right. Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 153 to the floor with a due pass as amended. And all those that agree will vote aye, and those that vote no will, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Nestor?
Aye.
Senator Brzezinski?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator
Whitfield? Aye. Senate Bill 153 as amended. We'll close the work session. And Senator Metzger, I'm sure that you'll be our.
I'll be happy to do that.
All right. All right. And now, Senate Bill 726 having been pulled, that is it. Committee, I remind you one more time, April the 1st, we will be going to Dundee.
Dundee.
We are working on Senate Bill 71, and it should be in some draft form for you fairly soon, and you'll all get a copy. All right.
That's April Fool's Day.
There's no other business to come forth, buddy. I'll call the meeting adjourned.